Welcome to the Department of Homeland Security, the officially unofficial podcast for the boys on Amazon Prime Video. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about the season finale, season 2, episode 8, titled What I Know. Aaron, what do you know about the season finale of the boys?
This season finale has made me into kind of a rabid fan of the boys. I liked it in season one. You know, it's a lot of fun, had some shocking stuff. I have grown to like it even more in this season. And I was wondering, well, what are they going to do? What are they going to do at the end of the season? You know, I felt like I was looking for something a little bit more apocalyptic, I guess. But honestly, this delivered interesting stakes and crazy kind of storytelling possibilities. And just like some epic, like pump your fist moments. It's like it's been like since Breaking Bad that a show this consistently swinging for the fences, a lot of fun, but also it's got these amazing scenes that are as well acted as anything. Like Carl Urban, holy shit, he is so good in this episode. They have these like amazing performances, but it's also just extremely fun and funny. Mm-hmm. It really hits that kind of same kind of Breaking Bad adrenaline, and it's kind of joined The Expanse as one of my new favorite shows that like I am abuzz to watch the next season. What do you think?
Huh? Amazon pumping out not a lot of content,
yeah,
not like Netflix levels of volume of content, but quality right now.
They got the gems, yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say this. You know, if this has made you a rabid fan of the boys, this has made me a rabid fan of Carl Urban, because holy shit. I mean, I've never seen an actor give a look like he gives when Ryan kills Becca at the end of this thing. I can't even describe it. It's like murderous, sorrowful, resigned. It's everything that moment needed and more, and it blew me away. He's so fucking good. Like, you know, you see him as McCoy in as Bones, right, in Star Trek, mm-hmm. and you think, wow, this guy able to do a very good McCoy here. And that kind of put him on the map for me, because I am not the world's biggest Lord of the Rings fan. I barely remembered he was in it.
Sure.
But that's the thing that, like, I was like, okay, Carl Urban, I know the name now. This thing is what puts him on the map for me as an actor to watch. Like in the future, I will go in going, oh, Carl Urban's in this. Awesome. I'm in.
He's capable of anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm super impressed with both his range and just the intensity he brings to a role like this.
Yeah, I think because I've seen him bring this intensity and like, you know, Judge Dredd, he's a very intense, menacing character. I was going to say, like, Carl Urban's been in my map for a while, but I'll forgive you if he's just Bones to you. But, like, I've never seen him put it all together. And the fact that this crazy, stupid, silly show, transgressive show, is what's really getting the full potential out of Carl Urban is, it's unexected, but I'm delighted.
Yeah. And this episode is great. The way they use him, the climactic battle. I think, you know, you mentioned like, oh, it's not the apocalyptic level like showdown that you want to see, but also it's season two, right? And season three has already been greenlit. We might get more after that. Let's just cool it. It's like when, you know, Homelander does the laser vision on the crowd and then they cut back and that's actually just a fantasy. I was disappointed, but I understand. Like, they can't pull out all the stops just yet. Even it, which is weird to say in a show that pulls out as many stops as The Boys does. They got to save something, right, for the finale of the series.
They're keeping a couple stops in reserve, but they're showing that they know where they that shows me that the show knows that it knows where we want it to go.
Absolutely.
And is not above teasing it with us.
And that final stop when they pull it out is going to be like blowing up the Hoover Dam.
Yeah, and I was expecting something like, okay, Starlight's got powers generated by energy, Stormfront generates energy for her powers, there's going to be some kind of like, you know, probably, I was envisioning some kind of lame X-Men fight where they're kind of like, you know, orbiting powers of clouds and like having like some kind of
Dragon
Ball Z.
Powers clash in the center and they push back and forth
right?
either way, yeah.
Sure, Harry Potter, Priori, and Cantum. I didn't expect the three super women to show up and just curb stomp, just bully kick the Nazi bitch in a ring.
Oh, my God. How cathartic is that?
But it felt so good when it was happening. Yeah.
Boys is giving us just exactly what we want in this moment.
It was like the end of that Rick and Morty episode where Rick and Summer roid up and kick the shit out of Satan, and then they just go on, like, they just beat up every person you kind of want to see beat up in society, X with DMX player. It's one of those scenes that felt good, and there's a lot of, like, really fucking Shakespearean drama going on, but then you also have this girls bullying this Nazi. Girls get it done. Girls get it done at the end of the season for sure. I loved it.
And they set up next season really well. You know, like the boys, it seems like the boys are all going their separate ways for the most part. Huey now has this job in Congresswoman Newman's campaign, I guess, for her reelection.
Sure, yeah. Who she's secretly evil too, it turns out.
Yeah, kinda. Turns out she's the one blowing up heads. It's gonna be an interesting season three.
Especially since, like, I didn't quite see this vulnerability in Homelander, but it all tracks.
Yeah.
Like, he is not sure he's ready to give up the worship. Mm-hmm. Like, what would he be without that? And leaving him in this pathetic state of jerking off on and blowing his load over all of Manhattan, I guess, from the spire of the Empire State Building. That's a shot you've seen a million times. Batman silhouetted against the moon, Superman standing, keeping watch over the city. This guy just jerking it frantically, trying to salvage what's left of his manhood and relevance. Yeah. What a great place to leave the character. He's no less dangerous.
Uh-huh.
But, like, you know, that's comeuppance. Pardon the pun.
Far more unhinged, though. Like, that look on his face. Yeah. I mean, you know, Carl Urban knocking out of the park. Anthony Starr destroying it, too.
I got lots of praise for Anthony Starr.
Queen Maeve, I'm not sure what the actor's name is, but she's got a scene where she is fan-fucking-tastic. It's so good.
Yeah, no, this show is really, really showing me a lot this season, and I'm super, super happy. I'm sure I haven't kept up. I'm not sure if this has gotten renewed for a third season.
It has, yeah.
Okay, I can't imagine it won't, because like it's just judging from the numbers it does on Twitch, the live watching, it's a single-handedly put the Twitch live watch on the map, the Twitch watch party.
Yeah, yeah.
Which plug, by the way, we do every Sunday night. No longer with the boys because it's off the air, but you know, we still have fun with Sci-Fi Sundays. I think this has done bonkers numbers for them. I don't know if we're going to do a season wrap up. It might depend on how much feedback we get. So send in to dhs@baldmove.com if you want to help encourage us. But one thing I'd like to talk about is, like, there's a lot of hue and cry about whether they should have binged this whole thing or released it one episode at a time. Judging by how much more engagement this has got as the season progressed, I've watched the numbers grow on the subreddit. Mm-hmm. I've seen this thing build momentum on the Twitch watch parties. I gotta think that this is kind of like a piece of evidence you can point to that, like, yes, the binge might be individually the best choice for a diehard fan, that building the brand and getting it to having this being relevant for 2 months out of the year has done a lot for it, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, this has gotten more buzz than Stranger Things got last year when it aired its, you know, 150th season. I think, like, this is the clear way to go if you want people to talk about your show for an extended period of time and not it. And, you know, that's fine when you're Netflix, I guess, and you got the volume, like I said earlier. If you want people to move on to the next thing every week, I guess, release everything as a binge, and they'll be off your biggest show in a week or two maximum.
Mm-hmm.
If you want people to realize, hey, no, we actually have some big stuff over here, and get people's attention, I think releasing it in weekly form is the way to go. Like, it's just... it gets everybody talking about it. The community can form around it. And, you know, if you don't have that much volume to put out there, that's the way you should do it.
Yeah, I hope that's the way they do it with The Expanse, because depending on when it drops, like, we might have the time to do a weekend binge like we do with the Netflix stuff. But, like, boy, it's just a lot more fun, and you can have, you know, it's something I look forward to, because, you know, we had the screeners, but I never got more than a week ahead of everybody. And, like, it was something like, as soon as I recorded The Last Boys, I can watch the new one. Mm-hmm. And it's been a lot of fun. I don't know if it ever felt like a chore, because this season's been a lot of fun and it's very good, but I am glad that we had a little bit of time with it.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what you guys think about that debate. Cause I know, you know, it's funny, cause I think that, Du Bois has been more successful than ever, but it is boasting. It's struggling with a 2.4 star rating on Amazon because of all the people pissed off that it didn't binge, review bombing it. But I think it's great.
Sure. Okay, let's get into the recap, yeah?
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur: Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was, and those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Yeah. All right, we start off with one of those school safety drill videos that they do, which Homelander has made with Ed Flanagan, some kind of, I don't know if he's a school security intendant. I have no idea what he is, but some kind of law enforcement. where they talk about the system of law that they've developed, which is lock all the doors and windows, arm yourselves, and wait for a hero. That's the procedure when there's a supervillain on campus at a school.
Survival's all that matters. Yeah, I mean, it must be hard to be a kid nowadays. When I did safety drills in the Midwest, it was fire, it was evacuating, tornado. And it was tornado, everyone getting down into a little fetal position against the walls with no windows. But, you know, now they do active shooter drills. And, like with little kindergartners and stuff. It's pretty grim shit. And, you know, I remember last year they made this big, there's this big splash this anti-gun group made where they did an ad where it's a back to school ad about children going back and like all the things they need. But then they started talking about like bulletproof backpacks, and then there was like an active shooter sit. And it's, I don't know, man, it's a fucked up part about American culture. It hasn't gotten a lot of press lately because, you know, there haven't been, you know, we've been blessed by not having a lot of mass shootings of late. But, yeah, it's one of those dystopian things that it's like, it's not
there
even
aren't kids in school right now.
You know what? I didn't even put that together, but you're right. There was for the longest time no schools to be shot up. Holy shit.
Right. We're 8 months into that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's grim, and it's recognizably grim. It's got a little bit of a more fucked up thing as Homelander and Storefront are pushing it, but shit. Survival is all that matters.
A couple of things that I took away from this, the teachers in this universe have firearms in their desk, officially sanctioned firearms to use against supervillains, which strikes me as remarkably ineffective against most supervillains. We've seen time and time again, it doesn't even work. Also, you know, pretty fucked up in that boy's way. And I thought it was funny, both the kid who uses a hole punch as a weapon, but maybe more ridiculous and more fucked up is the kids using the American flagpole as a weapon, a spear.
As a spear. Sure.
Oh, God. Yeah. Messed up.
Wild.
Next scene is the president's guy, the go-between between, you know, this congresswoman and Grace at the CIA or whatever, and the president, Jim Beaver.
I want to say he's the Secretary of Defense. Okay. I think that's his official, but Jim Beaver.
Yeah, he might be. I never bothered to learn who he really is. So he says that the president's bypassing the FDA with a state of emergency declaration and authorizing the use of Compound V for law enforcement and first responders. Mallory and Congresswoman Newman plead with him not to do it, but the president has made up his mind.
Yeah, so if you feel threatened, you can just like shove a vial into your like an EpiPen into your thigh, and now you've got a tentacle penis with which to fight crime.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm. If you actually did approve this, you would have overnight what 3/4 of all police officers with some kind of superpower. There's no fucking way.
Yeah.
No fucking way that they would pass up.
I mean, any PDs that could afford it, because apparently doses are going for $5 million a pop.
Oh, that's true. That's
so
true.
You know, you get NYPD, you get the LA PD, Chicago PD, some big city PDs buying doses of this stuff. But yeah. Yeah.
I love the colonel's like response of, you know, well, what if, like, can I say this to change your mind? He's like, oh, what do you got? Filming me fucking my nanny? Release it. I like to get out of the shithole, get into a Fox News commentator, put this shithole in my rearview mirror.
No shame. He doesn't give a shit about it, hurting his family. Nothing. He's just disgusting.
No, he knows he'll have a feathered nest to land in for his efforts.
Yeah, I mean it shows his priorities though, because he's not got a feathered nest to land in with his family.
Well. Unless that feathered nest is the nanny. Sounds like it might be.
What about his daughter? Okay. So then Becca is running through the woods trying to escape the compound while she's being hunted. Just a very quick scene there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go off to Annie, who is sending her mother off with some advice, and her mother sends her off with a cross necklace.
I love that she's with this woman with her experiences is worried about driving in the big city. Like, you just got kidnapped by an unstoppable killing machine and put into a super-powered kill site.
Uh-huh.
But, man, yeah, getting across a George Washington Bridge might be a lot, Starlight's mom. Better pay attention to the lane changes, those aggressive drivers.
Yeah.
Watch out for the cabbies. Holy shit. I don't know. I think it's intentional. Like, you know, this is some mom shit that you're seeing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the disparity between the soup life and, you know, her suburban mom life.
Seems like it's a little bit of a thong in their relationship, too, maybe, uh-huh. which I don't know how I feel about, because I think Starlight's got legitimate reasons to be angry at her mother, and her mother has not even begun to do the work to earn that trust back. But
yeah,
that's just me.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, Frenchie's developed an EMP RPG to shut down Stormfront's plasma bolts. They're planning to blow up A-Train's heart with epinephrine. This whole thing is kind of in the backdrop of, like, we've got a mission here, and the mission is we just need to kill all the soups, because that's the only thing that works in this scenario. We've tried every other route. This is our last resort.
It felt really good, because Huey's doing the good guy thing, like, oh, we're just super terrorists, and they're like, yeah, okay, I guess that's what we are. And it's like, well, they'll just make 1,000 more, and Billy and Butcher's like, well, then we'll kill them cunts too. Right. It's, you know, and then who was it? Was it MM or Frenchie that had the Wile E. Coyote?
As Wile E. Coyote was Frenchie.
It's Frenchie, yeah. It's like, yeah. If you, the fucker had an AR-15, meep no more.
Yeah.
I liked it. Like, it's all good points. Like, usually you have this shit and it's like, you know, there's one side that has the moral high ground, the other side. I feel like in this, like, you can make a case that, you know what, we've tried multiple times to law and order and go through the appropriate channels, and now it's like, nah, we're down. We've used the soap, jury, and ballot boxes. It's time to break out the ammo, baby. And yeah. Huey's the only one that's kind of like standing his ground here.
Yeah,
except for Starlight.
After
I guess.
You get it to a congressional hearing, and the soups come in and blow the heads up of all the people who were overseeing
Pop
that.
Heads,
what do you do?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Annie, you know, later on, she has essentially that to say, but she in this scene says, hey, I can get someone to testify. And they request a day to go find that person.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot to mention this, but back in. Man, they really shit on Huey so much in the show, and I find it hilarious. Back in the scene with that. Annie and her mom, Huey comes up in passing, and she's like, oh, that boy with the moist handshake. Which, God, he uses baby shampoo, he's Axe body spray, a moist handshake.
A moist handshake would qualify him.
In this episode.
That would qualify him as having superpowers if he lived in the Doctor's Horrible Sing-Along blog universe.
That's true. It would.
Because wasn't one of the minor villains Moist or something?
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember his exact name, but you're right. And then I really love Annie calling back as she's leaving. She says, Huey, like, come on, let's go. He's like this puppy dog, you know, that's just following her around. And I was looking at Huey's role at this point. What role does he have in the boys? You know, like, he's not the butcher out there getting it done. He's not the connection to the soups anymore. Now Starlight is fully integrated into the boys. He's kind of worked himself into a position where he has no role.
He's the canary still. Like, he's the one that has them seeking
an alternate. She's dead by the end, of course. But
yeah, I was going to say, the canary died in the coal mines in this episode, so you need a new canary. I think it's that. It's still, he's the conscience of the group, and he proved last episode he can get some shit done. He's got a little John Connor. Maybe he's punk-ass 12-year-old John Connor, not, like, badass Christian Bale John Connor, but he's getting there. He's getting there. John Connor wasn't John Connor from the beginning.
Yeah, that's fair. So then Homelander deduces that it must be Stan Edgar who blew up the heads in the courtroom. And Stormfront is excited because this is the thing they've been waiting for. Homelander questions what they do with the billions of people that get the compound who they deem unworthy. And Stormfront claims to have a solution for everything.
would it be a final solution, perhaps?
Some might call it that.
To the question of what to do with the wrong people.
Mm-hmm.
No, I they do something really subtle here, which I find models real life, is when you get the crypto racist in the same room with the real racist, mm-hmm. You think it's going to be a party, and then the crypto racist are like, wait, what? What are you saying? And there's just a hint of that, like, the Homelander hears, and it progresses by the end of the episode when she just starts like essentially saying the fucking 14 words and Heil Hitlering. He's like, ah, okay, enough. This is my son. But I like their kind of nodding towards that, where he's you think he's going to go full Nazi, and he pulls up at like 75% Nazi.
Yeah. And hear me out on this, because it's going to sound real bad up front.
Okay.
But Stormfront saying that Stan Edgar is smart for his kind, which is obviously her being racist, right?
Sure.
But it got me thinking about Supes, who might be smarter than average, like Loki from Watchmen, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or sorry, not Loki. Ozymandias from Watchmen. And then I was thinking about your theory that Stan Edgar might actually be a Soup, that he just hasn't revealed yet. Is it possible that that is his superpower, that he's super intelligent?
He's like a brainiac. Interesting. Or Reed Richards or Dot. Yeah, no, that could be cool. That would be interesting.
I thought so. Also, it might not even be, you know, now that I think about it, with the program they've got going with Compound V, testing it in adults and trying to stabilize that, I wonder if maybe he doesn't have super intelligence yet. But eventually he could inject himself with Compound V, stabilized, and get super intelligent. So as smart as Stan Edgar is now, it would like really crank up the drama if we saw it. Oh, shit. Now he's 10 times as smart as he was, which is always tough to do in writing something to make someone smarter than anyone who's reading or watching the thing.
Because you have to be fair, you have to be pretty smart to write a character that seems that way.
Right.
No, that's a solid theory.
You could do it in the 80s, I think, easier than you can now. Like Watchmen, you know, you could make a super smart Ozymandias more believable, because I don't think readers were as savvy and viewers were as savvy as they are now.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's interesting. On the other hand, it's also like these race scientists, race IQ people. They do allow for the fact, like Calvin Candy and Django, for that one in a million, like the bell curve on the other ends, like the exceptional Negro, right? Mm-hmm. So they that could just be her just being like, oh yeah, he's pretty clever for a black, you know, and he's only half black. Let's let it be known. Some white, you know, some white or European Hispanic genes in there. Yeah, it's all horseshit, but. It's hard to pin him down, because like their worldview is unfalsifiable. So
right, and then we move on to Annie trying to get at the heart of Huey's obsession with Billy Joel, and he's deflecting the entire time. She says Butcher's not wrong about the hopelessness of their situation, and Huey questions why she's helping if that's true. She says it's the same reason that he never gave up on her, because he never would, you know. And which to me is just saying like. Huey is in Frankenstein monster love here, you know.
Monster man, sure.
And I don't know if
I'm always here. I'm always here for those kind of theories.
No, I know you are. yeah, I don't know if people have we talked about how much of a monster you think Jack Quaid is on this show, or is that just in our watch parties?
It might be the watch parties, but I do. Yeah, Jack Quaid. I think his he's got a little monster man in him.
Sure,
and, you know. That's not to say he's an unattractive, or people would find him unattractive. You know, people thought Boris Karloff was attractive. People fall in love with the vampire, the monster. It's got a sense, that's got a certain appeal, but he's a monster man.
Mm-hmm.
He's a monster. Last episode, he did a full on monster man performance when, when Lamplighter burned himself, he just is sitting there on the floor, water pouring down his face. I mean, that's. That's Frankenstein realizing he's out of flowers to throw in the water right there. It came out of him. The monster man came out.
Yeah. So there's some monster love going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then they both head over to Maeve's apartment and ask her to testify about Vought and Homefront. She says she's too tired of being beaten down by the futility of changing things to help them. And they leave at her request. And man, am I underplaying this scene in that description, because, you know, he may be a monster, but apparently he's also a twink, because she calls him that multiple times in this scene.
Says I wish she could split him like dry fire.
So fucking good. And just the way he reacts to it as well.
There's also some subtle characterizations they've been doing with Maeve, like, you know, she started vaping mid-season, and she's moved on from vaping to actual just smoking.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, the airport administrator from Airplane. It's like, I picked the wrong day to stop sniffing glue. I picked the wrong day to quit snorting coke. It's like, as she gets worse and worse mentally and emotionally because of this insane pressure from Homelander, she is taking less and less care of herself.
Yeah.
It's a volcanic scene.
I've got a sick pun, a sick butcher pun that I want to make about Queen Maeve's preferences in men, but I'm not sure I can pull it off. I'm not sure I'm allowed to say it.
I gotta hear it. You can't. You want to. You want to record this on a podcast, or you wouldn't have brought it up.
I mean, she's calling him a twink, which is, you know, a reference to his slender build. Butcher is a much bigger man.
I've never seen a Twinkie monster man, but it could happen. Sure. The Mummy.
I guess she's just not a slender guy. She prefers Butcher. I tried. You're not even seeing that it's a pun. Never mind.
Oh, I got it. Okay. No, she likes her men Butcher. Sure. Uh-huh. I get it.
I told you I couldn't pull it off. And I'm not even sure I'm allowed to say it. As a straight white man.
Yeah. Queen Maeve is screaming, get out.
Yeah.
Get out on this podcast.
Take your fucking twink and get out.
Get the fuck out of here, man. All right. Well done, Jim. Let's move on to the next scene.
All right. Butcher, speaking of him, gets called upstairs and lets Becca in. She tells him, they took Ryan.
Yep. That's bad.
Yep.
Great scene.
It is. It's bad. Let's move on. The church leader. Who's the fucking name I stole him, though? Do you know this guy's name?
They mentioned it twice in this episode, but he's, Elrond Jr.
Yeah. Miss Cavage meets with Stan Edgar. He tries to talk the Deep back onto the Seven. Stan agrees, but won't let A-Train back on the team because Stormfront has problems with his race. And then A-Train overhears this conversation.
Was A-Train spying or was he invited? I wasn't sure.
I assume he's spying.
Yeah. Yeah. He was really quick on the move at the end of that scene, though. Did you know Stan Esker refusing the Fresca?
Yeah. He says it's garbage. It's trash.
Nasty stuff. Nasty stuff. Do you think we'll ever find out what the Fresca connection is?
I don't know if there's anything to connect there. You know, it's just, I mean, it's got to
be mind control stuff, right? There's got to be something like that.
Maybe. I don't know. It's tough to say because now, like, the church might be out of the equation mostly. I don't know if the church is going to be a thing with their leader dead and both A-Train and the Deep out of the church.
Right. Well, A-Train's not, right?
Once he goes back to the Seven, but that guy dead, and I'd have a hard time thinking that A-Train is interested in the church.
I think Gretchen, I can't remember her name, the Scientology therapist, I think she might be the new church spoke leader.
Good point.
And A-Train might be still beholden to them and drinking Fresca. But it is, it's interesting. Whether they'll continue this or drop it. It feels like they'll continue it, because like otherwise... I don't know, but yeah, it's kind of a self-contained storyline too. And as you're right, the Deep's out of, and A-Train no longer needs them, really.
Yeah.
So,
They were both apparently using it for what it could get them, which is back.
Although
in the
Seven. I guess the Church of the Collective still has all the dirt on A-Train that he's definitely afraid to get out in the public, right?
So that's
true. They could sink him with their internal research bureau if they wanted to.
Good point.
I got to know about these Frescas. That's all. I want to know about this Fresca situation.
All right. Season three, the whole episode dedicated to the Fresca situation.
I got
to
get a six pack of Fresca for this week's Sci-Fi Sunday. I just got to.
And they do confirm that Stormfront used to be, you know, long ago, a member, a follower of the church.
Yeah, that's an interesting connection, too, to make.
Yeah. And you know, that we kind of questioned that back when she said, oh, yeah, the church used to be a very different thing before they started letting, you know, Atrian's kind in.
Right.
So, yeah, there's that. And then the other boys are excited to get to know Becca, and they gather around her. Butcher runs over, essentially, to interrupt them, to say he's going to go dig around for Ryan. Becca apologizes for coming to him for help after what she said to him. They catch Butcher being human for a second, which I thought was a nice touch.
It was cute. MM and Frenchie both trying to, you know, treat the queen of the boys like she's royalty. And I also like Frenchie's take that I'm very close to Butcher, you know. It's good. It's all cute. I like it.
Yeah, I mean, they see him, or they see Becca as a window into Butcher, right? Like, oh, we've got this rare opportunity. Let's get in here and let's dig around in Butcher's personal business, which he would never allow them into.
Nope. It's the same fascination of like when Picard shows up with one of his girlfriends on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody from Riker on down wants to talk to her on Tin Ford, and Picard's having none of it. And it's the same energy. It's the same energy.
And then Edgar gets a life or death call from Butcher. Just a very quick scene there.
Mm-hmm.
Then Homelander and Stormfront pick up Ryan from Ashley Daycare. He's missing his mother, so they decide they're going to cheer him up with a trip to Planet Vought. And he likes it initially, but Homelander and Stormfront get swarmed by the crowds there, and it overwhelms Ryan, so Homelander flies him out of there.
I kind of want a big homie with bacon. That sounds good.
Yeah. It's probably just a mediocre. Like, you could probably get the same burger at Applebee's.
Yeah, it's a Planet Hollywood burger. Maybe they get two holes burnt through it, so you're supposed to think the Homelander personally seared the ground beef.
Sure.
But did you notice that Ashley's like they had this last where she's losing her hair, but it feels like that she's like plucking herself bald. I wonder if there's like a Crickety Ricket kind of plot line going on with her, where you're just going to see this woman's descent into physical, emotional, and mental madness.
Yeah. I'd be cool with that.
She's going to lose eyes, teeth, perhaps some limbs. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Finger toe for sure. It does seem like I didn't get this at first, but I think Homelander, he does have a genuine attachment to Ryan, right?
Yeah. Yeah, for
like,
sure.
Maybe it's like a narcissistic reflection that he like wants something better for his son than he got himself. But like, I thought it was surprisingly with it and tender the way he got Ryan out of there and took off and then went to the place where he feels safe in his little like cabin of solitude that he's got up somewhere in upstate New York. That's something I've been wondering all like, you know, what does he actually think about Ryan? Well, there's no one there to stop him from being a dick to him or being like, straighten up and be a man. This is a bunch of pussy shit or whatever. And he didn't know exactly what to do, but Homelander got a soft spot for Ryan.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to more of that here pretty soon. But for now, we go to Annie committing a faux pas by talking about how much she hates her mother in front of Huey. She left when Huey's mother left when he was six, so she's not dead. I think a lot of us have maybe assumed that. Just like Annie
I did. Guilty.
Yep. They used to have Billy Joel dance parties, and that's why he listens to Billy Joel and why he's so clingy. A-Train suddenly appears in the car, scaring the shit out of him. They pull over and jump out, and he gives him some paperwork that blows their minds in order to get Stormfront out of the Seven. I mean, we all kind of knew what was in this paperwork, right? The history of,
they did
of Stormfront.
They did a great job of letting us feel smart and clever, but you know by having a pretty obvious reveal. I love that this is I haven't seen a lot of like Huey and Starlight that I've liked, but they finally gotten in the last episode or two a place where, you know, Huey's kind of gotten his own thing and he's doing better, and I was engrossed in this scene. I'm like, wow, these guys are really like knocking it out of the park, and then A-Train just hops in shotgun. It's so it's It's just the boy. It's just only the boys can do shit like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sonic it, boom, so and he's jarring. In the back seat. And, it really
and they,
is.
They use the camera and the effects to great effect here. Like, I feel intimidated by his power. Like, if he wanted to run through you, he could, you know? And nobody knows yes. that better than Huey, obviously.
Right.
But, like, his speed is intimidating. Like, the physical force that comes off of him when he's close to you when he does that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do a great job with the camera and effects.
Who had the best sonic boom in a car this week? The boys or Fargo? We're recording this a week. This will be all out of chronological sync by the time it's released.
True.
And but yeah, as for Fargo fans, the three of you that are also boys fans, enjoy.
Yeah, but we're also covering that, by the way. And yeah, they're doing something kind of similar here, I think, which we'll get to here in a minute. But I think Fargo had the better sonic boom, frankly.
Yeah. As good as this one was, it's hard to beat the Fargo one.
I don't know if there's something more to his mother's disappearance. If there's something nefarious or just more detail that he hasn't gone into, because it takes him a bit of prodding to open up here, even about that. But like, I don't know that I need more. I don't feel like I need more, but I also don't feel like that well is pumped dry.
No, and great shows have these hooks. Like, not all of them lead somewhere, but it's just like, hey, you know what? What this scene did is gave Huey a little bit more texture that you can attach a little bit more if you wanted to. Like,
yeah,
maybe there's some deep dark secret. Like, maybe he was secretly, he's a Ryan type. He was secretly a soup, but you know, who knows?
Yeah, or his why dad would his and his mother... mom had views on whether or not they were going to put him in the VOD program, right? Like,
right,
something like that.
Yeah. And like, why would a mother who seemed like he was paying attention to the child and they had a great relationship, why would she just up and take off? And also that adds a lot. It just instantly made me like Huey a little bit more because like, oh, you would become a stage three Kling monster.
Yeah.
If at that tender age with such a close relationship, your mom just took the fuck off, gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's brutal. It's brutal.
Especially with women. Like, you look at how Homelander's life without a mother has affected him, right? Like, of course, Huey's going to be this clingy to girlfriends.
Yeah, and, like, that's why I always hang in there no matter how bad it gets, because I know how bad it feels when someone bounces. Like, I felt like I understood Huey a million times more than I did at the beginning of the season, and it's really humanized the monster man for me.
So there's a good scene here with Butcher meeting Stan Edgar in a restaurant. Offering to fix his problem by getting Ryan away from Homelander, and his price is that Becca be allowed to stay with him. And they make a deal that involves tracking Butcher's cell phone, which becomes important later. There are a lot of questions answered here, questions that we've gone over in past episodes, like why would a man of the pigmentation of Stan Edgar be putting Stormfront into the position he's putting her into? And it turns out that he's doing that simply because business is business. And he prioritizes that above everything else.
And probably thinks that he has some way to control her too. This is told like this was well, a story well told in David Simon's Plot Against America. You know, they had a prominent Jewish American that thought that, you know, he could be the good Jew in the what was this administration? Not Heisenberg, Lindbergh administration.
Yeah.
It's an interesting material that resonates. And Giancarlo Esposito, I tell you what, when he gave that look to Butcher and goes, and you call me ruthless, because Butcher's like, this is psychotic behavior.
Yeah, remember this about Butcher, like
like when we realize the full import of what he's like, you think he's trying to do the stand-up thing and all this stuff, but then at the end he just wants his wife back and fuck this Ryan kid,
and he's willing to take Ryan away from her, which he knows is the thing that she wants more than him. He's willing to sabotage and blow up that in order to have her
and use her natural protective instincts with a lie to get her to keep her under control. It's, and like I said, Giancarlo, one of the most, you know, perfectly warm, friendly, funny guy in real life, but he plays a lot of like cast iron fucking monsters of all time. And him leveling that look of like, it's like that Starlight scene where she's like, I don't want you to look, I don't want this accepting look from you. This like, oh, right, you're the same, we're the same. He gives that to the Butcher, and Butcher has no defense against it. It's an amazing scene.
It is. So much is not really said, you know. It's all conveyed by these two excellent actors.
Mm-hmm.
So then Stormfront lands at the cabin where Homelander took Ryan and tells him that he should talk to his son. He sympathizes with Ryan by telling him about the first time he was in a crowd and how terrifying it was, so much so that he ran away and cried. And then he convinces Ryan to learn how to use his powers with the promise to teach him. I hate this scene because it's a moment of... because it's a real moment with Homelander. And I don't say, like, I think this is a bad scene and it shouldn't have been in the show. I think it's an amazing scene that makes me feel internally disgusted with myself for starting to empathize a little bit with Homelander.
Happens, man. It's the same way I feel like when ever you see, like Hitler and his, like, friends just kind of like laughing or just like kind of like having a human moment, if he's playing with his dog, it's like, the fuck you.
Yeah.
You don't get to play with dogs. Like,
it's right. You're a monster.
The uncomfortable realization. They're also human. They always are. They're not a different race. They're not a different species. They're literally just like us. Maybe some screws loose, maybe some differences in education and life experiences, but they're all human. And that's the frightening thing, right?
Yeah. For sure. And it's also frightening because I know, like, this is not the emotion here for Homelander is not fake, but the end goal is all just to make him into whatever he teaches Ryan is going to just be awful.
Right.
There's nothing good he can learn from Homelander. When you see this moment of leveling with this kid, it's disgusting, you know?
But also, like, I feel bad for Ryan because, like, the opposite of crazy is still crazy. And I think that Becca is the opposite of Homelander. And that was insane. That was probably going to fuck up him, too, to do that. Like, you know, if he found out when he was 12, he found out when he was 20 that his whole life is a lie, some Truman Show shit. I mean, I saw Truman Show. Mm-hmm. You give Jim Carrey superpowers, it's not going to turn out well for him.
No.
And, like... what he needed some of this.
Yeah.
He needs a less psychotic version of Homelander to like be there for him and to show him the ropes and to teach him how to be a Superman. And he also needs his mom to keep him grounded and like, you know, in touch with the mortal. He needs Ma and Pa Kent, and he's not going to get it.
No.
And it's just a damn shame. It's a damn shame.
For sure. So Butcher knows where Ryan's being kept, and Huey and Annie reveal to the other boys what they know about Stormfront. Butcher congratulates them, which is super fucking weird, right? Like,
sincerely
says, oh, great job, guys. You know, this is not the, oh, all right, well, really well done then, or whatever he does. that's a bad Butcher. He says he's going after Ryan, and all the other boys volunteer to join him, and they gear up.
Mm-hmm. It's a great gearing up scene too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hilarious to see Butcher in my wife is around and I don't want her to see me for the true asshole I am, mode.
Yeah.
Nobody really reacts to this in the way that I would think they would though. This is the one moment in the episode that felt a little bit false to me. And I don't know if they're reacting that way because Becca's around and they don't want to embarrass Butcher by calling out like how ridiculous this behavior is. This is not the Butcher they know at all.
So you think him being congratulatory and supportive is like because Becca's around? I thought that they actually did something that genuinely impressed him. Like this coming up with this Nazi dossier, this deep proof, like that's like out of nowhere is...
I mean, yeah, but he comes up like Huey time and time again comes up with solutions to problems that lead them to the next part of the plan, and he never congratulates him. He always does this fake congratulatory, you know, understated thing.
The only thing I thought where they're doing something intentionally is this is also the first time where like yes, Starlight and Huey came through, but they had nothing to do with it.
Right.
Like this was A-Train's grudge and axe grinding. So they get praised to high heavens for something that just fell in their lap, where all the other careful work and sacrifice they made through the season he's shitting on. Right. So like, it could be the wipe, but I thought it was also kind of like an ironic thing that like this is the thing they get credit for, the thing that just fell into their laps, literally.
Yeah, that makes sense. During this gearing up scene, which is, you know, the quick cuts between people sliding bullets into magazines or whatever, and Huey sending emails to, apparently they send this email to VNN, and it has the subject, Stormfront is a Nazi, open ASAP, shocker, with 5 exclamation marks, which fucking struck me as like, is that really the day and age we live in where you can't even get the attention of the news media without getting a clickbait title on your fucking email that blows the bloody doors off of Stormfront's identity? Yeah. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's like oh god, I imagine, I bet it's true though. Like, probably. I bet most newsrooms across America are like the crank file from Watchmen, you know? Like, mm-hmm. What is going to be the thing that rises through the top? And, you know, clickbait it is. But I noticed that same thing.
And then there's kind of a, you know, another half to this scene, which is Butcher telling Becca that she's not going with him, but she insists. And she also insists that he keep Ryan safe and get him back to her. And he swears on his brother's soul, on Lenny's soul, that he will.
So all this stuff, all this careful plots of coming together, and why this scene is brilliant is because I literally couldn't tell you what Butcher was going to do, because from what I knew and from the performance Carl Urban was giving, he understood the import of what he just did, swearing on his brother's soul. And I don't think that Butcher is a big fan of the afterlife. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't believe. But what he really realized is this is about Rebecca's trust, the last vestiges of it. And I'm trying to get her back. And if my first act is to betray her like this after I've done this unthinkable thing, I'll have lost her forever. So, like, does he hate the soup so much that he'll do it anyway? Does he love his wife enough that he'll have this forbearance? It's a great fucking like middle of the episode cliffhanger, and it all works because I think that, you know, Carl Urban and this lady have great chemistry, and they've carefully architected everything in the season to lead up to this moment, a real moment of truth for Butcher. And it just keeps getting better from here. But yeah, I thought this was another incredible scene.
And it's so subtle the way that they frame that too, because he just takes a look down at his cell phone, which we know is the thing that is, you know, part of this plan. They're going to be tracking that to find Ryan. He looks at it. Can he really do this? Decision time, you know?
And that look he comes away with after he promises and he's looking at the phone, he knows it. He knows he's lost the plot. He knows he's way too deep in the canary mine. But will he keep going or not? I mean, it's Butcher, right? We don't know.
And yeah, the guy who's the only way out is through, right? Like, that's been his motto the whole time. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Then we go to Kimiko and Frenchie. Kimiko's worrying to Frenchie that she'll freeze up when she sees Stormfront and not be able to help with their plan. Frenchie tells her that she'll know what to do when the time comes.
I also think it's cute how, like, he's a quick study with her, you know, like it's only been a day or two and he's already picked up enough to have a little bit of conversational language. It's great. I like I said, this, so many of the relationships in the show at the beginning of the season, I'm like, I don't know what to make of it. Like, you know, Huey and Starlight don't buy it. Kimiko and Frenchie especially don't buy it. And, you know, I was like, it's going to be really interesting to see if they fucking turn the corners on all of them. So
after they made Frenchie into a character. Yeah. Like they,
right. They needed
knew so little about him.
And I knew they only had 8 episodes. I'm like, well, how are they going to do? Like, they're going to round out MM and Frenchie and Butcher and Huey and Starlight. Get the fuck out of here. They did it.
Yeah.
I'm on board anyway.
Somewhere between now and when they confront Stormfront and kick her ass, Kimiko has taught Frenchie how to sign both Nazi and Kitty, which I think is pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it would come up a lot in the discussions of Stormfront, right?
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure she doesn't have a sign for Stormfront, so just use Nazi. That's a good standard.
Sure, sure.
All right, Homelander's teaching Ryan to use his laser vision. It's not working. He tells him to imagine someone he hates, but Ryan doesn't hate anyone. And Stormfront tells him, look, there are bad guys out there who want to hurt us just because we're white, and you need to be strong to protect us. Stormfront suddenly finds out that she's been outed as a Nazi, and she flies off. I love that they're using the deep figurine as the target practice for Ryan's laser vision.
Right, right. It helps if you hate him. You can't really hate the deep. He's ridiculous. But this is the scene where, like, Homelander started having the kind of like, what? White genocide? What? Yeah. Which is, this is the current white supremacist belief that they're trying to get people to buy into. The fact that, you know, the fix is in for white folks, and the white race is going to be extinguished by them diluting our pure Aryan blood. I mean, it's like the South Park episode. This is what white supremacists actually believe. Yeah. Anyway, hey, if you want to fight about it, I'd love to. I'd love to wrestle some proto-Nazis over on swizzbowl.com for three right turns. It kind of gets dull in there with just all the me talking to all the liberals.
Sure.
So if you want to fight about it, I'll meet you over there. But yeah, it's ridiculous. I mean, that's the thing. Like, right? Like, how the hell are white people going extinct?
Yeah. It's a fiction that people are spinning. Yeah.
Yeah, and if we are, it's because we're all complicit with it, because it's you look at the heads of governments of the most powerful nations, and it's a pretty consistent color. So I don't know. I think that's part of the plot, actually.
Can we just fast forward hundreds, I don't know, 1,000 years in human history, when we'll all just be so mixed that,
you know, what?
None of this will matter.
That's the sad thing. That's the sad thing. If you look at any kind of, like, you know, mutt dog, a dog that's like not particular purebred, they're inevitably the sturdiest, hardiest, most genetically viable of any of the like, you compare that to like a fucking German Shepherd with its hip dysplasia, or like a English Bulldog with a, that can barely fucking breathe, it's been twisted out of shape. Like, we would probably ironically be way better and stronger as a species if we were this uniform kind of tan,
sure,
the strongest of all the genes all together. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the Jesus Christ. You could. Yeah. Anyway, I like I said, Swiss Bowl, three right turns. We can talk about it.
Yeah, inevitably we'll get there.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain. Featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations, while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, Frenchie and Kimiko set up a soup bomb and alert the others when they see Stormlander flying away. They spring into action at the same time that this story about Stormfront breaks. And Stormfront goes into Vought Tower, where she gets a lot of stares and sees memes about her already spreading on the internet and the news. Which one of the boys do you think made that animated song meme? It's got to be Huey, right?
I don't know.
She's a Nazi, run her over with your car thing.
I mean, I just figured that's like the, you know, that's just the meme masters. Like, the culture wars being fought on the internet with memes for sure. And both sides, like, I'm not a fan of the both sides. Both sides have the memes, a little bit of meme mastery. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me that. that was pretty funny.
I get the impression that Huey made it because he's showing it on his cell phone to the rest of the boys and saying, pretty funny, right?
Or
there's some truth to that or something like that. I don't know.
I remember the scene. I can see that. But I also love the like really frosty reception she's getting at, because that's the other thing about these fucking neo-Nazi white nationalists is every time they get outed, they have this thing that like the silent majority is with them. Like every American is really upset about all these issues, but inevitably whenever they're outed, it's the opposite. They find out that they're fucking on an island by themselves, because like, yeah, there's a lot of people angry about a lot of issues, but like this kind of racism, not like the systemic racism that like, you know, we're fighting about now, but this kind of shit really doesn't have a constituency. It really doesn't.
Yeah, this is kind of racism you got to go out of your way to perpetuate.
You really do. You got to be. Yeah. And I like that aspect of it as well. That even like Homelander, who's super fucking racist.
Yeah.
Is like, you're too far gone, lady, with this white genocide shit.
Right. No, he just thinks that black people are lazy. That's what he thinks. Yeah. Like there's that scene earlier where he's like, oh, they'll find him and they'll just sit around and. He doesn't even know what the end of that sentence is. Like, he can't envision a future where, you know, people have superpowers and they don't have to work for, survive. Homelander, and like,
Homelander doesn't have black friends. He's got A-Train, who he kind of fucking hates because, you know, he's not a Superman. And he doesn't read, like, you know, black intelligentsia and stuff.
I don't think he reads at all.
Davy Crockett, his cultural references are Davy fucking Crockett. What the hell does he know?
Yeah. So the boys lure Homelander away from Ryan with a sonic bomb, and Butcher and Becca grab him. Homelander destroys the pile of sonic devices and realizes something's up. Butcher decides not to go through with the Stan Edgar plan and tells Becca about it. And then Vought SWAT arrives at the cabin, and they call out Butcher, which Homelander hears. That's not good for him. And he demands to know where his son is. Butcher says he wants Becca and Ryan to leave without him because he's too toxic of an influence, and convinces her to go. I'm going to stop it there. This continues very soon. But are the Vought sonic devices like supposed to be Amazon Echo type?
I think so. Or like a combination of that and like the Beats by Dre pills.
All right. Yep.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both of those things, just a big pile of them, which I thought was funny.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of Amazon poking fun of itself a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm. And this scene with Becca, you know, we've debated, you know, does Becca make Butcher better? And it seems like here she does, you know, she's... I don't think he does this for anyone else. I don't think he gives up his plan. He probably just goes through with it, gets what he wants, like he always does, if it's anyone other than Becca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that he is sacrificing himself here. He full well knows that the, you know, betraying Vought and Homeland, this is not something he's going to walk away from.
And he's giving her up, right, so that she can have the thing that she wants. That's
right.
That's selfless.
Because he's got this.
He's not selfless. He's got this in toxic scenario.
He's got this toxic mindset that, like, whatever his dad did to him has infected him, and he'd be helpless to not infect his son with it, and he wants it to die with him, and he wants Becca to raise this kid right. Yeah. And it is, like, it's all twisted and toxic, but it's heroic and selfless. And it's Butcher being his best self, or at least we need him to be a hell of a lot better moving forward, but
sure.
No, I love it. I love it. And like the anguish and the pain that he brings in these performances. We talk about Carl Urban a lot. I want to talk about Anthony Starr, because when he walks in here and says, "Did I hear you mention Butcher?" and like shuts the door and then says, "Where is my son?" and gives this look. I mean, I've seen this guy do this like half a dozen times in Banshee, and every single time it was like it was epic, the results, and this was no different. Like him splitting that dude in half and then screaming, like roaring, "Where's my son?" He just crushes this fucking character,
yeah,
so hard. And it just keeps getting better. Like the next time you see him, he comes out of his cabin just covered in brain matter and gore. Mm-hmm. Like they don't even have to show you to make you think about what kind of last few minutes of life these guys had on Earth. Oh my God. Yeah. Jesus, these guys are incredible.
And then the continuation of this scene is Becca not making it out. Stormfront lands, trashes her and MM's car. With them in it, she calls Annie a lying slut over the photos of her. Kimiko laughs in her face, and then the Supes fight. Maeve shows up, and then the girls get it done as they kick Stormfront's ass. Just, you know, literally have her down on the ground, wailing on her with kicks and punches and superpowered kicks. I don't know. It's good.
Yeah.
She tucks her tail and runs at the end of it.
She has to. She's getting her ass kicked too much. I love, man, there's this, because like they hand, and I kept on thinking they're building to like Starlight being like this badass. And when you hear this person say, "Hey, Kraut," I thought this, okay, well, now I'm going to get the scene where Starlight just beats the hell out of her with her superpowered electrical power. But it's fucking Maeve. They just start all wailing on her, yeah, where she just curled up in a ball. Oh, God, it's. Yeah, I mean, we already blew our load on this scene in the intro of the podcast, but good God, this was just pure good feeling watching.
I thought this might have been the moment that we're anticipating where Kimiko finally speaks. I thought she might have been the one who said, "Hey, Kraut,"
because
she's
that
laying behind her
too, right?
With her neck broken, which, you know, we should talk about that, I guess. Like, what kills Kimiko if she can have her neck snapped and then just get right back up?
She regenerates that fast. That was wild, because I'm like, did they kill Kimiko? I would buy it. Like, you know, the boys is in that nice, like, Game of Thrones, the expanse space where I don't think that any major character is safe at any time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, even Huey, like if they mm-hmm. killed Huey, like it would be a huge moment, or they killed Butcher or Mother's Milk or friend. Like it's all within the show's envelope, which is, I think, the most fun to watch when you really don't know that anyone's safe.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like when her head like started to twist back into shape, I bet if you tore her head off, that would do it.
Probably.
But if you just snap the spinal cord and her brain still got some activity, yeah.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions around that, because we know we've seen, what's his name, Gecko, who can regenerate limbs and stuff. But it seems to me like if a limb is lost, if there's that kind of catastrophic damage to most Supes, they don't recover.
Yeah. Like if you chopped off Gecko's head, would he grow back a whole body?
I don't know.
Maybe if you kept the head alive, but that's the thing. It's like, I buy that you snap a neck, you don't rip it off, that you could probably regenerate from that. But yeah. I do have one problem, because we've been sucking this episode's dick the entire time. And I didn't even notice it through the second watch. How did Queen Maeve get here? How did she know to show up?
I don't know.
Because that's the only fly in the ointment is she orders to, like, there was no, like, does she know their phone number? Does she know how to track them? Was she just following? Oh, you know what? She's mean mugging her hard in that scene of everybody being judgy of her at the tower. Because she flies there to the tower after she gets outed as a Nazi, tries to do some damage control, and flies back, and I think goes right there. So maybe she just tails her from there.
How do you tail someone? If you can't fly, how do you tail someone going that fast?
Why do people think that Queen Maeve can't fly? Because of the plane accident?
Yeah, like Homelander has to carry her down, right?
Would that have killed her if she'd stayed?
I don't know if it would have killed her, but I think she would have crashed with the plane, yeah.
I assume that Queen Maeve could at least like fly like golden era Superman, like leap tall building, like Incredible Hulk, kind of like just essentially like kind of. I think that's the way that Wonder Woman flies in the current DC film. She doesn't fly so much as she just like jumps and bounds this way and that. So it's not as fast as Stormfront, but she did get there, you know, 5 minutes later. So I don't think it's a huge hole, but it is like, yeah. You got to make a couple connections that they don't explicitly make for you.
Okay, I had one other problem with this scene, which I thought you were going to mention.
Oh, what's that?
Last episode, two episodes ago at the Sage Grove facility, make it a whole big deal when Huey's van gets flipped. You know, he gets this big shard of glass through him. They have the whole thing that leads on from that. Here, Becca, totally fine. MM, totally fine. When their car goes flipping, I would say more catastrophically than the van did.
It's got a 5-star safety rating. Those side cushion airbags, man. You know,
Ford Taurus or whatever they're driving. Yeah,
they're all buckled in. I will say that that was a great scene too. Like Butcher doing the right thing and sacrificing, and having it turn to ash right in front of him. I thought was and the slow mo. It just this scene was great.
Yeah, and then abandoning the fight. That's about to ensue, right? Because we've seen time and time again, the Butcher doesn't back down on Supes. He'll stand up to Black Noir. He'll go fight him one-on-one, fist fight him. But in this scenario, when Becca's potentially hurt, he runs the other way, right? To go look, to go help her.
Right.
I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Homelander killed everyone in that cabin, and he's still pissed. Butcher tries...
Just him coming out soaked in blood, like ears ringing. It's amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
Butcher tries to run with Ryan and Becca, but Stormfront stops them and she starts choking Becca to death. So Ryan finally someone he hates and blasts her with his laser vision. She gets Anakin Skywalker'd. Unfortunately, he has also blasted Becca just a little bit and she bleeds out.
I had the same thing written in my notes. She got Anakin.
Yep. Her dying words are to remind Butcher that Ryan is good and that Butcher promised he'd keep him safe. I saw this laser blast from Ryan coming, not like super early, but definitely in this scene early.
Yeah.
It didn't, it didn't matter because it was still very, very good. And
yeah, I didn't see Becca getting taken out though.
Yeah.
That was the tragedy. And he fucked up Stormfront. Is Stormfront dead? I don't. She's Anakin, but like
I wonder if she's gonna get Vader'd. Like she's been Anakin Skywalker. Will she get Darth Vader'd? Because they mention in the next scene at the news conference they are holding her in an undisclosed location.
Right.
And she's not dead in this scene, so
yeah.
She might be back.
Yeah, the way Billy screams at her dying and like this way, like I just think Carl Urban just puts in so much anguish. And then when, you know, Carl Urban stands up with that tire iron and I'm like, is he going to beat Stormfront to death? And then I'm like, oh no, he's going to beat Ryan to death.
He knows he's about to do something very bad.
And then like Homelander shows up and that's the turn of the tide. That's when, like when Ryan like hides behind him and Butcher's just standing there at the tire iron or whatever, or the crowbar, that's where he kind of he finally pulls himself back squarely onto the side of Angels, I guess.
And I think he does that because he knows, okay, he can go over there and he can beat Ryan with this tire iron and Ryan's going to kill him, right? Mm-hmm. And what will that turn Ryan into? Well, that lands right in front of him. It literally lands right in front of him and he's forced to go, oh shit, I'm just sealing everyone's fates if I do this. And I'm not living up to my promise to Becca. Like, it's literally, it's the last thing he's got of her, right? Is this promise. He's willing to fight Homelander to the death afterward to protect Ryan like he said he would. Mm-hmm. It's a hell of a scene and a hell of a performance from everybody.
Is this guy, the showrunner, is Supernatural this fucking good? Because, like, the thing is I didn't know that The Boys was capable of this. Yeah. I thought The Boys was capable of being shocking and gross and juvenile, but this kind of, like, operatic shit, this emotionally grounded stuff, I didn't know that it had this, it was this sneaky good.
Yeah.
Like, all this stuff connects, and it's, like, very, like you said, he was about to kill this kid, and then the future landed right in front of him, and... this thing works so well textually and subtextually. What is this guy? Pritke? I forget the guy's name. That's the showrunner. God, I mean, Supernatural has been running for like 17 seasons. It's got a rabid cult following, but fuck, right. I'm gonna have to check it out. If it's half as smart and fun as The Boys is.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to Homelander. I don't know. We kind of already touched on all of this. But Homelander lands and beckons Ryan to leave with him. Ryan goes to Butcher's side instead. Homelander is going to kill Butcher, but Maeve intervenes and she tells Homelander that he's going to either let them go or she'll release this recovered plane video. Also, not just let him go, but he'll stop hunting Starlight and leave her and Elena alone. And it works.
Yeah, everyone will see you as the monster you are, and no one will love you ever again. And that he can't cut off that supply, man.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one thing I didn't see. Like I feel like that's the whole scene of him burning the whole crowd down is illustrating that he knows that he can rule these people like a god. He absolutely could, no doubt in his mind or anyone's mind.
Yeah,
but he doesn't want to. He wants the love. He wants the worship. He wants, like, I love how they put into the crowd noise chanting his name as he's thinking about it.
Huh. I didn't notice that. That's cool.
And also I thought that Anthony Starr sold the personal cost Homelander was paying emotionally to do this.
Yeah.
To demean himself like this, to call himself off. It was physically painful for him.
Mm-hmm.
Which Jesus, like, season, God. I wouldn't have thought that you would leave season three thinking the Homelander is even more dangerous and unpredictable, but they did it.
They sure did. So we go to a news conference where Stan throws Stormfront under the bus over the courtroom attack and claims that the deployment of Compound V is being postponed indefinitely. Homelander publicly welcomes Starlight back to the team and falls in line with a smile, but he's raging on the inside.
Oh, I love how the white noise just overwhelms his hearing, and his eyes, they just keep on zooming in on. You notice the Starlight got her old costume back too?
Oh, did she? No, I didn't notice.
Yeah.
Nice.
She's back. She's out of her Slutlight gear and she's into her Starlight. It's nice. Yeah. It's
good stuff.
It's going to be an interesting seven next season.
Mm hmm.
To say the least.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. So they've got six, right? Well, Black Noir is out of the picture.
Is he dead?
No, he's a vegetable, he's is what they say. Yeah.
Yeah, he's comatose. So you got Black Noir, Asterix, mm-hmm. Queen Maeve, Homelander, Starlight, A-Train.
Yep. I think that's only five. Currently? Yeah, because Stormfront's out of the picture and Black Noir is out of the picture.
So, and, yeah. Well, the Deep's out of the picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Black Noir, I'm counting. But yeah, no, there's going to have to fill some. And I don't know. Like, yeah, what will they do? Because now, like, presumably Compound V release has been put on indefinite hold. So, mm-hmm. like, the super hero versus villain project's been canceled. Like, what is the geopolitical shape of the world next year?
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
I want to see more of Stan Edgar because we just got just a taste of him this season.
Oh, we will. Like, I think Stan Edgar is going to be a big part of next season. If I'm,
there's going to be like a, I want it to be like a Cold War, but for the fate of Vought between Homelander and Stan Edgar, because they both know a hell of a lot more about each other now.
Yeah,
and yeah,
I've got
it's going to be interesting.
Connective ideas on how all this stuff might be working behind the scenes that we'll talk about here in a couple of scenes, but yeah, it'll be interesting. So the head of the church meets with the Deep and A-Train to say that he knows A-Train leaked the info about Stormfront, but he loved the firm anti-Nazi stance that he showed. And so he's back in the Seven and the Deep is out and A-Train is ecstatic. The Deep is pissed off and toxic. And he says, fuck Fresca, which I think is him formally quitting the church, right?
And good for him, because... you know, the way these cults work is when you're in this situation, the temptation to double down and swallow the bullshit and, like, you know, sign up for the is very strong. That's what they're conditioning to. Him breaking free, it's unironically good. And I don't know what they do with his character, because his character is just a punching bag.
Yeah.
I like him. He's like one of the like little bits of comic relief you get, but like, I wonder what they're going to do with him next season that will keep him relevant, because he's, you know, like, I don't want to see him, you know, doing the SeaWorld shit and getting drunk in Applebee's. I kind of want to see what is his arc? What is an interesting arc they can do with him?
God, he'd be the best SeaWorld showrunner, though, wouldn't he?
That's the thing. Like, he could fucking probably unironically turn SeaWorld's fortunes around.
Yeah.
Like, take some of this therapy he's gotten and, like, give it to Shamu and help these guys with the dorsal fin collapses and, you know, them act. Yeah.
He probably views that as beneath him. That's probably, like, too. But he cares deeply about these fish.
Yeah, it's the thing. He does. He really does.
They're his friends. I don't know.
It'd be interesting to see him be as like an environmental warrior, kind of like that would be interesting too. Like, he's like super Greenpeace or something.
Yeah.
Shepherding the world's oceans. There's a lot of things they could do with him, but I am curious to see, because I think he's great. I think he's really fun, and he's an undeniable part of what makes the boys work.
Yeah. So Annie's wearing the cross after seeing the hand of God at work, aka Butcher doing the right thing. She tells Huey that she has to take responsibility and try to steer the Seven in a better direction, even though it's not safe for her. And Huey tells her that he needs to grow personally by not clinging to people and going off on his own. She mistakes that for a breakup, but he sets her straight immediately. And then she asks who he's talking about, if not her. Smash cut to Butcher talking to Ryan.
Right. Very intentional cut there. But no, it's a nice, this is all kind of... you know, denouement kind of material. Mm-hmm. But I liked it. It's a nice moral message. Like, hey, you know, is it safe? Is it easy to do the right thing? No, but what are you going to do? Let the assholes drive? You know where that car is going to go a couple miles down the road. So,
yeah,
I like it. I like it. They did the. I did think I actually was kind of excited for Huey to be like, I like you a lot, but I need to work on myself a lot, and I've made some interesting revelations, and to be the kind of guy, like, I thought they were going to go full into, like, you know, maybe sometime later, but right now I need to work on me and you need to work on you. Mm-hmm. And I was in for it. And then they fucking pulled the punch at the last minute. So it's, I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe you can do both, work on yourself and be with someone you like. I don't know.
It's been said before. Yeah. Sure. But I didn't hate it, which means I've turned the corner on the Monster Man, I think.
Yeah, yeah. and it seems
he's monster walked his way into my heart.
Seems like this is going to be a new era of the boys, which is to say, maybe not the boys next season. They're scattering to the winds. Butcher at the end of the next scene or whatever walks off when he's offered a job. I don't know where he goes. MM goes home to his family. Huey and Starlight are still going to be together, but he goes off and gets a job in Newman's campaign. Like, they're casting them far and wide, I assume, to just, you know, get the gang back together for the triumphant reunion tour near the end of season three. But it's going to be an interesting The Boys group next season.
Yeah, I imagine it's the Congresswoman Newman is what's going to be the inciting incident. But I thought the also, you know, speaking of Carl Urban being great, the scene that he has with Ryan where he hands him the tag of St. Christopher and says it, you know, your mom gave it to me and it kept me safe. And that shit is really good. I actually was a little disappointed that he wasn't going to go with Ryan, but it's probably asking a lot of Butcher. I mean, I think him walking away from the Colonel, putting the sunglasses on, is essentially saying, oh yeah, he's going to be in the new, he's going to be in the boys version 2.0 now.
Yeah, and I still think nothing has changed about the toxic influence that Butcher would provide for Ryan, right? I don't think he I don't think he can be this kid's father, but I don't know. I think nothing has changed. He's can willing he to protect him and try and save him, but he can't be his dad.
He might be a good Uncle Billy though.
If you see him once a year at like Thanksgiving, yeah. And he is like,
yeah, he can. Let me tell you something about your mother, boy. If he can do something like, you know, deliver a St. Christopher every single, you know, for major holidays, yeah. Some cookouts, yeah, yeah, and maybe he can spend some time. He needs to go to mother's milk's house. That's where the real wholesome shit's going down.
Absolutely.
Frenchie and Kimiko probably going to some crazy. They're still living in the underground drug den and doing jobs of ill repute. But yeah, I think the Marvin Mermelvin, I can't remember his real name. I think he's got the wholesome activity down pat.
We
building dollhouses.
We kind of talked about all of this scene for the most part, except for the part where Grace, you know, she takes Ryan, but also she says the charges against the boys have been dropped entirely and formally, I think, and then offers him, you know, this position on the newly forming soup affairs task force. I don't know, department that is going to be run by Victoria Newman as the new czar. And she is sneaking money unofficially through the back channels to Grace in order to form a team to monitor soups. This is super interesting in light of the final scene, I think, the second to last and final scene where she blows up the head of the church leader. An office of soup affairs run by a soup is interesting. What could possibly
secret
go wrong?
A secret soup to that.
And I'm half hoping that they make Victoria Newman a truly, you know, righteous, upstanding congresswoman, because I think our country needs more depictions of good politicians to set fucking examples. I don't think so either. I almost guarantee they're not, but I wish that we had more positive depictions of politicians.
I agree, but I do think they're going to hard both sides of, like, you know, kids, the Nazis are bad, but you know who are bad too? The fucking socialists. And they're always at the bottom of every bad, you know, it's like just when you think. And, you know, because to the extent that this Congressman Newman is a Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez stand-in, to the extent that AOC is a Democratic Socialist, I do think they're doing the whole, like, you know, well, don't get too taken with the moral crusaders to say they're only doing good and robbing from the rich and giving to the poor, because they're fucking crazy too. Which that's pretty nihilist, but you know, I don't know. I'll be along for that expiration, sure, because, you know, it's clear to see how that can go off, that ideology can go off the rails too. You know, you look at the history of China and Russia, Stalin and Mao are not exactly heroes.
Yeah.
So it can definitely go dark places.
I do wonder, I'm starting to like come around on some of your theories and wonder about like some things with Stan Edgar. So Stan Edgar's super smart. You know, I might be coming around on the theory that he's a super powered intelligence. A guy like that, I don't think would be thwarted this easily. He doesn't put such a risky person into the limelight and into power without a contingency plan. And I'm wondering if Newman isn't that contingency plan, because you see this on like, we saw it on this week's episode of Fargo that we just reviewed. You see the underworld putting into power, a mayor in that particular case, right? And that is right. So that when the mayor gets into power, they could trade favors with him. He'll owe right. them. And you could see Stan Eggert doing the exact same thing with Congresswoman Newman here.
Sure.
If as a backup to, you know, if something goes wrong with Stormfront, here is where I have control. I don't actually need her. And in that case, they would have been grooming this woman for, what, 30 years? Like, inject sure. her as a baby with these superpowers, have her clear the way through all the legal, all the political channels that she needs to by blowing people's heads up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could see it. And it would really amplify, like, Stan Edgar's involvement and intelligence in season 3.
Yeah. He's using the anti-Vought Crusader for his own purposes. And yeah. I also think it's to your point, when I go back to that great scene between Edgar and Butcher, Butcher says something like, you need Ryan because he's your contingency plan. Edgar gave him nothing, no reaction at all. So, yeah. And that could just be him playing poker face because that's his default rest, you know, like Giancarlo Esposito has resting poker face. But it also could be kind of like him, like, that you're way off base, but I'm not going to let you know, like, you know, again, poker face. So
yeah,
you're right. Because that's the thing. It's like, Ryan's a shitty countermeasure against Homelander. Because he's not, I mean, I imagine that Homelander would kick his ass if he had to right now. So mm-hmm. like, what's your hope is you're going to raise him right. And when he's 18 years old, he'll be good. And you're just trying to like, keep Homelander under wraps enough to where you've got that, like, whereas, you know, Congressman Newman's ready right now.
Yeah.
And maybe could explode Homelander's head.
Maybe. Yeah.
It's interesting to look at Homelander and Stormfront's performance at that hearing in light of knowing that they had no idea what was going on. That, you know, yeah. it wasn't like they were panicky or concerned. It's more of just like, what the shit is happening?
Mm-hmm. Why would she kill the leader of the church? What purpose does that serve except for Stan Edgar to go back on the deal that he's made with this church guy, right? Like,
you think he's going to go back on the whole deal? Like, A-Train's out?
Oh, I don't know about A-Train being out, but okay. the deal to, like, I don't know, get a commission and get the church involved in Vought's business. It's like...
Yeah.
He doesn't want mixed up in any of that shit. That's toxic.
Sure. Right.
And so this is a, you know, nice, clean, although very messy way to bring that to an end. I don't know. I get the feeling. And like Homelander at the beginning says, oh, yeah, this is all the work of Stan Edgar. I don't think he's wrong. I think Stan Edgar, you know, had a hand in the courtroom stuff because it strikes more fear, you know, into the hearts of the public. Like, holy shit, if they're not safe, no one's safe. We need Supes to protect us. I think that's all part of the plan.
That's a good point. That's a good point, because you're right. Homelander is not an idiot.
No.
That's not his problem. He's actually very smart. Mm-hmm. He underestimates people chronically, but he's not an idiot.
And he understands that kind of strategy, I think. He doesn't understand like memes and this new age of like social media sure. and stuff, but he does understand like basic strategy, and he's pretty adept at navigating that stuff.
It'll be interesting to see how he navigates his brand. Is he able to like dial back to racism, you know, dial to like 7 or 8 from 11 and like still maintain that kind of, well, you know, anti-foreigner, I wonder if that will still be part of his brand and just divorcing from, you know, blaming everything on Stormfront. Oh, she fooled us all. You know, I wonder if he can continue part of that in the next season.
I don't know.
Only it's wild because like I'm curious to see how they advance the world building and whatnot next year. Because, you know, the world keeps serving up craziness too.
Yeah.
who knows? Like, we'll have a plague, some kind of super plague going on next year. Whether they rip from the headlines, you know,
it would also be super interesting if Newman is under Stan Edgar's thumb, because now she's running the soup affairs team and there's dark money being funneled to her. It's possible that money is coming directly from Stan Edgar and it never even hits the government. And now they're funding a government team off the books with Stan Edgar's money. And man, that gets his hooks in deep, right?
I don't know. It's like finding out that Al Capone was running Elliot Ness the whole time.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's some fucking six-dimensional chess he's playing.
If he's a super smart, super intelligent super villain, maybe. But I came up with, so it can't be that smart. yeah, so the church leader's head explodes. All that stuff, you know, turns out it was Congresswoman Newman who's exploding the heads. And then Huey goes to her office, her campaign headquarters, to help fight Vought legally, and she agrees to give him a job.
Does this mean that Cindy was just the red herring the whole time?
Yeah, I mean, I guess she's still out there, and she's still got that power.
She is out there.
So
that's another one of those hooks. I don't know if they're going to hang anything on, but like that, I guess that feels like it's much more a dangling, actively baited and bobbered hook than some of the others.
Yeah,
because they you know, it was like the hammer at the end of one of those episodes. So mm-hmm. Maybe
we'll see if
we'll
she
see more.
Shows up, and they'll just have the head squashing battle.
Yeah, body squasher versus the whole body squasher. Uh-huh. Who wins? Who wins?
I don't know. We'll see.
And I do like they ended with the Billy Joel.
Yeah.
He's been a big part. Did we talk about this on the podcast, that the connection between Billy Joel's Stormfront album and this season and the fact that Stormfront's on? Like I like how they tied the Billy Joel into Huey's plot, you know, more intimately, but like I also just got a kick out of all the Billy Joel's classics they're spinning to.
You know, he's got some good songs. Give him that.
He does. The piano man can sing a song, turns out.
And that's it for the episode.
That is the end of the episode. Jim and I just made a command decision that we will be back next week to have a season 2 wrap up. It seems like there's enough open questions about what's going to happen with the world and what shape is next season going to take place, and who knows what kind of feedback we're going to get. I feel like there'll be enough to have at least one good episode where we put this thing to bed until next year. But we will be back next week. Please send in all that feedback to dhs@baldmove.com. Love to consider it. We'll see you back here next week. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you then.